I am so excited to announce that I have released the first official tarot diagnosis spread book. Tarot and Self-Discovery is a therapeutic tarot journey with over 200 spreads, including over 152 card prompts and over 50 robust tarot spreads. You can purchase a physical copy on Amazon or a digital copy at thetarotdiagnosis.com. You are listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. I'm your host, Shannon. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and I also happen to have a love for tarot. Each episode, I invite you to reflect with me as I work to demystify the tarot and the human experience, all while exploring tarot's connection to mental and emotional health. While this podcast may feel therapeutic, it is not meant to take the place of psychotherapy. So grab your cards and join me as I work to create a pathway to better understand ourselves and those around us. Today, I'm sitting down with fellow therapist and RO-DBT practitioner, Emily Richardson. Emily is a millennial therapist, fluent in evangelical faux authenticity, and loves playing with the tarot. She provides soul work for fellow millennials with evangelical baggage who long to love and be loved. She also has an upcoming ebook called Tarot for Spiritual Neglect, a journal and planner toolkit for beginner tarot users and enthusiasts alike. In this book, she breaks down symptoms of spiritual neglect and helps you explore what your spiritual needs are. Hey, Emily.
Hey, Shannon.
I'm so excited to be talking to you today and super excited to have another therapist on the podcast because we get to nerd out about mental health and different therapy modalities and tarot in the midst of it all. And yes. You specialize in one of my favorite modalities, radically open dialectical behavior therapy, RO-DBT, just RO for short.
So many syllables.
Yeah, right.
So many letters, so many syllables.
Can you tell us a little bit about what RO is and also maybe how it differs from regular DBT? Like what's the big difference? Yeah. How do you use it in your practice? How do you practice? Give us the rundown.
Oh my gosh. Okay. How much time do you have?
Yeah, no pressure. Tell us everything.
I'm a big RO nerd, so I could talk about it forever. Let's just start at the beginning because it's, as Julie Andrews would say, a very good place to start. RO-DBT was developed by Thomas Lynch in the late 90s, early 2000s. He studied next to Marsha Linehan, who is the godmother of dialectical behavioral therapy. And what Thomas Lynch was finding is that he started identifying a specific personality type that he called the over-control personality type. This is not a disorder. This is not a personality disorder. It's just, it's a type in the way that like Enneagram is a personality type.
Right.
Just a little bit more evidence-based than the Enneagram. Anyways. And so traditional DBT is geared towards personalities that have an under control type. Mm-hmm. And so under control usually means that these personalities are dramatic, sometimes a little erratic, impulsive, and they do things because they wanna, or they don't do things because they don't wanna. Whereas an over-control personality is rigid, can be more reserved. They're very good rule followers and they do things even if they don't wanna. They are extremely good at suppressing their emotions. A lot of people will look at them and go like, oh, you're very successful. You're so disciplined. You're accomplishing so much. Usually secretly inside they're exhausted and are deeply resentful of everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
been there.
So I think hyper perfectionism, maladaptive perfectionism is usually, I think, the easiest, like broad descriptor of an over control personality type. And the target, so like traditional DBT is targeting a lot of skills, I think, is probably the best word.
I usually say emotional dysregulation.
Yes. Yeah. Because you've got like, there's the four domains of DBT. And so there are some mindfulness skills and some interpersonal skills, but there's a lot of like getting to know your feelings and how to be friends with them and not let them rule your life.
Right. Exactly.
and radically open, the target, actually, there is some like get to know your feelings and figure out how to like open up and be playful. But there's a lot of, it's target social signaling. The Dr. Lynch says that like at its core, over control is a disease of emotional loneliness.
Yes.
We're hustling so hard to be perfect, to be like worthy of connection, that when we like stop at the end of the day, we go like, I don't know if anyone really knows me. I don't really know if I know who I am or what I want. Like, you end up feeling really lonely, even though you talk to people and you work for people all day long.
Right.
And so a lot of it's the skill targeting for radically open is how to open yourself up to learning, making mistakes, being vulnerable, and how to make friends, connect with other people, handle conflict. For like, usually over control personalities are chronic conflict avoiders. So how do we embrace conflict as a way to strengthen relationships? How do we stop using white lies as ways to smooth over? How do we actually volunteer our real authentic emotional reactions instead of suppressing it and saying, I'm fine, it's fine.
I was just going to say, I'm fine, everything's fine.
It's like, there are a couple of like over control, like classic slogans.
Yes.
I'm fine is a classic.
Yeah.
Maybe is also a classic. Like, instead of just saying no.
Right. Because people pleasing, right? Don't want to disappoint, want to be good. That goes along with the perfectionism.
I know my clients mean no when they go, And I'm like, okay, so that's a no.
Yeah. And also body language.
That's a big one. Part for me about social signaling is being able to tell people like, your face just like went flat, or like, oh, you're like hardcore in a fake smile.
Yeah.
Because like, so something that RO said, like the RO puts together from research, is how human beings are excellent social safety detectors. Mm-hmm. We're very bad lie detectors, but we absolutely know when someone feels at ease and comfortable and safe, and when they don't.
Yeah.
So when a person is smiling and going, I'm fine, when they aren't, we know that they're not, and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And usually we don't like to be around people who are like that.
Right. And a lot of times you might not even be aware, like, why am I having this feeling that, like, you know, I can't describe this discomfort, but it could either be because you're feeling that way, or you're picking up on the person in front of you feeling the discomfort, and neither of you kind of know what's going on.
100%. It's like, I practice this when watching reality TV shows.
Are you a good one.
TV show person?
I mean, I do love some good trash TV.
Because it's so, like, we love the human condition.
Yes.
And to be able to, like, experience it without it being our jobs, I think is really
That's exactly
fun.
What I tell people. Yeah.
I get to play, like, therapy bingo. Like, I'll, like, someone will say something, and I'm like, ooh, we got some childhood trauma. Yeah. Probably when you do with your mom. And then, like, later it cuts to, like, oh, my mom left. And I'm like, knew it.
Right. Or like avoid an attacher, disorganized attacher. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So there are times when I'm watching reality TV and I go like, there's something about this person I don't like.
Yeah.
And I can't figure it out. And then I'll go, oh, is there social signaling? They'll go, like you'll have a person who will go like, I just am so insulted. And as they're saying that, they have a smile and they do like a little like head shake, as if they're going like, oh my gosh, I just don't know. And it's like, how can you be insulted and smiling? That's really off-putting.
Yeah.
That's really off-putting. And they don't think they're doing that. They think they're seeming very together. That's what they're trying to project out into the world. That's usually what over-control people, what we want more than anything, is to be seen as competent. And so vulnerability is like really scary.
Well, and that, I feel like that blends nicely into this idea of perfectionism and how at its core, perfectionism is a coping skill. So even you just talking about, that's so insulting, and this person saying it with a smile and a head shake, there's an air of, oh, I still have to be put together when I say this thing that is maybe treading towards conflict or confrontation. So I still have to be put together because I don't want to be seen as not put together or not good or not this or not that. So we learn how to portray ourselves in a certain way that makes us feel safe. And it, yeah, blends in perfectly with perfectionism and why we need to protect ourselves, or why we're feeling we need to protect ourselves in certain situations, is interesting. And I think that's, you know, what one, going to therapy can help you with. Why are you the way you are? And also RO and DBT in general.
Totally. Cause they talk about, like, over control comes from three different places. It comes from nature, nurture, and coping. And so part of the nature of an over control personality is we are extremely detail oriented, which means we're able to pick up faster than a typical person changes in facial expression.
Yes.
We also are more threat sensitive and less reward sensitive. So really awesome things feel fine, and really scary things feel really scary, and kind of normal things feel kind of scary.
Yes.
And so that's why perfectionism. And then so you put that brain into a perfectionistic environment that prizes achievement and performance. Mm-hmm. Perfectionism becomes the obvious coping skill.
Right.
Because we naturally feel a little bit more threatened than the typical person all the time. And perfectionism feels like such a simple answer to that state of unsafety.
I feel like we're already like off to the races. So I kind of want to pull a card and see what Tarot has to say. Otherwise, like, I feel like we're just going to nerd out about perfectionism. But I really want to bring Tarot.
Me too.
Because there's already like a million things I want to say based on that. And I'm like, okay, hold on. I have to save it before I get too excited and just like word vomit all over you.
Totally.
All right. What deck are you going to use?
Oh, I felt very conflicted because like any tarot enthusiast, I have 13 decks.
Yes.
Literally. But I'm going to use the Modern Witch deck.
Oh, nice.
Because it is my personal favorite. I don't use it with clients. It's
really?
My own special like personal heart deck. Yeah, I will use it with friends, but I'll use it for me.
I love that.
I protect the energy
I have a few decks like that as well. And it's interesting that you chose Modern Witch, because we were just talking a few minutes ago about the motto, everything is fine. And one of my favorite alternative cards, is that deck's Everything is Fine, Ten of Swords card. I actually even with clients who are not super into tarot, when I'm talking about this concept, I will show them that card. I'll be like, you know, I have this tarot deck that's got some really cool art, and I feel like you might resonate with the images. And they get so excited, even if they're not into tarot or they've no desire to learn about it. I've had a few clients say, oh my God, please email me that photo so that I can spend some time with it. So it's a good deck.
That
good card.
Is definitely, that Ten of Swords image is definitely over control energy.
All right, so I figured we could just pull a card to see what Tarot has to say about perfectionism and coping, RO. We'll just see what happens.
I pulled the Five of Wands.
Ooh, okay.
I love the Five of Wands.
Two flip over. All right, I'm going to go with this one. Ten of Pentacles.
Oh, I love the Ten of Pentacles.
Okay, interesting.
I was going to say that for every tarot card.
Right, I know. We just love them all, except I'm not a big fan of the Sun or this. Actually, the Strength card, which we should talk about. We talked about maybe bringing that up on the episode because we're in a Strength year. But so Ten of Pentacles, Five of Wands. Is that what you said? You got Five of Wands? Mm-hmm.
Five of Wands, yeah.
So what are you thinking with Five of Wands?
So the first thing that came up for me is the Five of Wands, number one, has been a card that's stalking me a little bit.
Oh, okay.
And the way that I've been interpreting it is all of the different demands of perfection, like coming and like sword fighting in my head.
Yeah.
Where it's the like, be prettier, be more athletic, save more money, build more business stuff.
Yeah.
Spend more time with your kids. Spend more time outside.
Do all the things.
Be more creative. Yeah. Where it's like you end up feeling it's not the thing I really enjoy about the Five of Wands is that it's not because it's play fighting, because they're hitting each other with sticks.
Right.
It's not quite as like threatening as like Five of Swords, but there still is like, oh, that's a lot of chaos. That's just a lot of like energy and turmoil, and that's usually the type of distress that over control, that perfectionism tries to like come in to solve, and yet it creates it as well. Like it's arsonist and firefighter at the same time.
That's a really interesting thought, that it ends up creating it even though it's trying to control it. Because I think that's something that happens a lot when we find ourselves in this space. The thing that we are trying to avoid ends up being the thing that we're actually creating.
100%. Yeah, it's the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes. I feel like I talk about that a lot. Yeah, especially with over-control and perfectionism.
Yeah, because oftentimes you kind of create, like, a metaphor I use a lot in session is perfectionism being kind of like this armor. And I use that not just because it's a stealing so hardcore from Brené Brown, but also because I'm usually working with evangelical perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And so going into the armor of God.
Yeah.
And so in the way that was taught to me in conservative evangelical culture was this, like, you armor up in perfectionism of whatever the theme is, like the breastplate of righteousness and the helmet of salvation. Like, you armor up in the perfectionism and then you're safe, but you're also alone.
Right.
And we keep thinking that, like, by putting on the perfectionism armor, we'll be safe and then feel connected, because that's how our brains work. Like, our brainstem is wondering how, like, wants to be safe. Our limbic system wants to be connected, and our prefrontal cortex wants to learn.
Right.
And so once we feel safe, we're like, okay, cool, now we're ready to connect. And it's like, but I am only safe when I'm by myself. So I just, like, you lose. You can't win if you're losing.
And it's interesting hearing you talk about the evangelical component too, because I feel like that blends in nicely with this Ten of Pentacles card and maybe some generational patterns or cycles. So I feel like maybe the Ten of Pentacles is talking about the root of perfectionism and the root of maybe over control, because something that I've noticed a lot too is when folks come in and they're exhibiting some of this over control behavior, some perfectionism, one of the first questions I ask is, what is your relationship to judgment, to criticism, or what role did
question.
Right? Or what role did judgment or criticism play in your family growing up? Because a lot of times when we are exhibiting perfectionistic tendencies or we're in that type of over control space, it's because we grew up in a really critical household where nothing was ever good enough. We were never good enough. The goalpost was always moving. Oh, you got an A, get an A+ next time. Oh, you cleaned your room. Okay. But you didn't do the dishes. And so we, you know, as children then start to internalize that, and that becomes this central component of our self-narrative, that I am not good enough. And so I have to adopt this perfectionistic tendency in order to cope with the pain and discomfort of not feeling good enough. And if I continue to strive to be perfect, maybe people won't see that I'm actually not good enough. And then I'm protecting myself. So, but it's an illusion.
Right. Because then it sets you up. Because even then, if you're like, okay, cool, the only relationships I've had because I've achieved some veneer of perfection, means that they are actually, those relationships aren't based in authenticity and who you are.
Yeah.
And as you were saying that, I was also thinking, like, so you have the, like, household piece. And again, that, like, really conservative evangelical, like, I was told from the pulpit and from Sunday school and from Bible stories and Bible studies that, like, inherently I was never ever going to be good enough. And that inherently, the goalpost was always moving, is that the goalpost is impossible, because you inherently are evil.
Wow.
And so Jesus came and died. And the only reason that, like, you aren't going to suffer for all of your mistakes is because God doesn't even see you. He sees Jesus covering you. And in order to honor that sacrifice, now you need to go and live accordingly. And so, it's this very, like, layered, like, it's a classic like double bind of like explicitly being told like you're never going to be good enough, but then implicitly being told like, but you're going to have to work for it anyway.
Right. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking you were talking about authenticity a moment ago and, mm-hmm. and how vital that is. And what you just described tells us you were never given space, or if you grew up in this environment, you don't get to be authentic. It's not an option. So then once you start to maybe deconstruct some of those narratives and those experiences, mm-hmm. the thought of authenticity can be so destabilizing, because now suddenly you're yeah, like, what,
it's
in
so
your mid-20s or right, or 30s or maybe even 40s or 50s when you're genuinely. Deconstructing. And it's like, oh, I don't know who I am. I don't know who I am.
And I should have known. I should have figured this out already. Yeah. Where I have clients who are just like, I feel like I blinked and everyone figured this out. And mm-hmm. everyone figured out how to date. Everyone figured out how to like have an adult like sexual relationship. Everyone right. figured out how to do this. And I didn't. What is your vibe check on the Ten of Pentacles? Does that card like fill you with like peace and joy? What is your vibe check on that card?
That's an interesting question. You know, it really depends on what's happening in my life. So one of my favorite parts of this card that I feel like I don't see talked about a lot, but here, I'll show you. Folks who are listening aren't going to be able to see this because, I don't know, maybe eventually I'll start putting video up. Maybe I'll put this video up. But up in the corner here, do you see, it's kind of blurry. Do you see this like upside down looking house or structure?
Yeah, I do.
So that's where my eye goes. So when I see that,
really?
I feel that sense of destabilization, that sense of, oh, what have I been taught that doesn't fit with who I want to be or who I'm becoming. And so there's kind of that, like, even when you are in this process of trying to heal your perfectionism or you're deconstructing or you're trying to manage your over-controlled nature, there's still this, you know, background noise that exists that you have to acknowledge or that will kind of always be there. So my vibe check on this is usually, oh, even though I might be doing well working through generational patterns and acknowledging that I come from a flawed family, everyone is flawed, and the behaviors that I learned, you know, aren't necessarily from malintent, it's because, you know, it was passed down.
Right.
I guess I have a bit of empathy with this card, but still a bit of sadness, for lack of a better word.
Sadness. Yes. Yeah. That is my vibe check with this card.
Wow. Okay.
I'm like, it's the 10 of Pentacles. It is the completion of like tactical magic. And yet, for me, it's the child in the card. I look at that baby, and that baby looks kind of like uncertain and unsure, and it's like clinging to mom's skirt but doesn't want to make eye contact with the adults or the dogs. And there's something about that. All the other children in the tarot are usually like
smiling,
psyched.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm loving my life. I'm dancing, I'm holding hands, I'm getting a cup, I'm on a horse. Like, they're like happy. And this kid is like uneasy.
Yeah. And also they're in this, in the traditional imagery, they're also, I don't know if you can see, they're looking backwards. They're actually looking away from their family, which I think is fascinating. I feel, oh my gosh, there's so much we could unwrap just with that imagery there.
I know.
Why are they looking away?
Why are they looking away? And yeah, it's just such an odd, like, this card is so complicated for me because I was like, again, I'm like, the Ten of Pentacles, the pentacles are arranged in the tree of life. Like, it should be this, like, very, like, fulfilling card, and yet I am left feeling sad and uneasy.
I agree.
And maybe it's because of that legacy piece, and that like, generational legacy feels uncomfortable for me.
Interesting that you say, especially using the word legacy, I think, is really important. I'm kind of thinking of the Hanged Man now for some reason and legacy, because... And especially with the child looking away, because I think when we are perfectionists or we are over-controlled, we tend to easily exist in like reversed Hanged Man. We don't allow ourselves to like hang in the actual like upright hanged man position. You know, we are actively trying to defy gravity.
Approach coping. Yes, it's called approach coping. We're going to fix it.
Okay, talk about it. Tell me approach coping.
Yeah, so hanged man reverse is approach coping and hermit reverse is avoidance coping. Yeah, so over control coping has these two categories. So one of the examples is like if your washing machine breaks, approach coping has you ordering a new washing machine for expedient delivery for tomorrow. You're not going to get someone in to look at this washing machine. You're not going to try and like unplug it and plug it back in.
No patience.
It's like, I cannot handle the fact that this surprise has popped up in my life. I did not have time for this. I did not plan for this. And it needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed now. And it isn't until later that you go like, if I had taken a breath and waited a second, several other options would have come to mind. But now I have a brand new washing machine on its way, and here we are. That's approach coping.
The purposeful pause. It's important. Which upright would be purposeful pause. Yeah.
I was about to say, yeah. And that's the like, I'm going to like sit in the discomfort and find ease in the discomfort and figure out like what's next and receive enlightenment in that discomfort.
Right.
Over control people don't want to do that.
No.
We don't like process learning. We like book learning. Like if you give us a book and we can like memorize it, like got it.
Right.
Learning how to ride a bike, like that type of process experiential learning. Mm-hmm. No, thank you. That's
right.
Us.
Right.
Avoidance coping is the washing machine breaks and I'm just going to ignore it and hope that maybe it magically fixes itself. Because again, I don't have time for it. Yes. I don't have time for this. This is not part of the plan and I'm just going to ignore it and maybe it'll just fix itself.
Very Four of Cupsy.
Yeah.
No, there's not this looming problem. What are you talking about? I'm going to focus on this other stuff.
No, it's fine. Yeah. I also feel like Hermit Reversed for me, Hermit Reversed is like Peter Pan a little bit of like, I can't take credit. That's Rachel Pollack. That's 70 Degrees of Wisdom.
Oh, I don't even remember that, but I love that.
Yeah. I am going to go into like my solo world, but not to receive enlightenment and listen to my intuition and come back refreshed. No, no, no. I'm going to deep dive into delusion.
Yeah.
And never come back.
Sometimes that sounds great.
It really, really does. Especially one of the targets, like the behavior targets in RO is obsessive planning, where like when I had a friend come over this morning for coffee and I made muffins, and an obsessive planning thing is as I'm making the muffins, I'm practicing what I'm going to be saying to her about what the muffins are made of. And then practicing when she goes like, oh, that's really yummy, for me to go like, oh, it was actually really simple. And I just threw out, why am I obsessive with planning a benign interaction that's in 12 hours? That's
but you also... Nonsense. You bring up such a good point. You said something important there. You said, oh, but it was so simple, because that's such a behavioral characteristic of perfectionistic people too, where they tend to take so much credit and blame when something goes wrong. Like we're so quick to be like, oh yeah, it's all my fault. I should have done this. 100%. I should have done that. But once something goes well, or we're complimented on something like the muffins, for example, oh, these muffins are great. It's not, oh, thank you. Like I really enjoyed making them, or I even modified the recipe a little bit. It's, oh, it's so simple, or, oh, it's because someone taught me, or well, it's not my recipe, so I can't take credit. I just put it together.
Which is hilarious, because it's hilarious to me that I just like casually threw out this because it wasn't simple.
Oh my God. See, look at that. It wasn't simple.
No, I have a lot of food intolerances. And so I'm like, no, I had to like hand make the oat flour and hand make the cashew flour. And then I had to mash bananas.
Oh my gosh.
And like measure everything. No, it wasn't simple. It's yummy. And I'm glad I made them. They're delicious. But like simple they were not. And yet that is exactly what I'm planning to say with absolutely no insight as to why. You know? I don't even catch myself to go like, come on.
But, you know, it's that's a, I mean, it goes back to perfectionism being a form of self-preservation though, too, because I think with the muffins, for example, it's so funny. We're just talking about muffins.
Baking is an important part, I think, of over-control culture.
That's the next episode.
Baking things for other people.
Oh, yes. Because of that need to be one, having a role
yes,
a purpose and caretaking, yes. But self-preservation and perfectionism go hand in hand, because when we feel like we are in control of something or we're doing something well, or maybe even not even taking credit for something that maybe we put a lot of effort into, we can do that because, well, I don't want this person to think I just think so highly of myself, or I don't want this person to... People talking about fears of narcissism has like skyrocketed in the last few years. So I hear that a lot. I don't want people to think I'm a narcissist. So of course I'm not going to take credit. You know, I'll only take credit when the bad things happen. That's self-preservation. It's coping. It's trying to control how you're being perceived by other people at all times.
And that's the hard part about, this is, I think, the convicting part of Radically Open. Like Radically Open wants to like give you a hug, but it also is going to punch you in the stomach.
I was just going to say, but like maybe smack you around a bit.
But
kind of like Churro.
Sure, genuinely, because it's like, I see you. You don't have to apologize when it's not your fault. You don't have to say it's simple when it's complicated. Mm. Also, when you're doing those things, you are actively manipulating other people.
Oh, I say that often.
Yeah. Secret desire to control the outcomes. And that secret desire to control is not in line with your values. That is not an honest thing. That is not a kind thing. It is a survival thing. And most of my clients are no longer in survival places. And so it's that warm hug of like, that was a survival coping skill. Right. And I understand where it came from, but it's also like, and now you got to quit. You gotta quit, and you have to understand, like, it's not just like, oh, that's a cute thing. You don't want to take credit. It's like you are actively trying to control other people and trying to control a situation, and you are robbing yourself of the benefits of the human existence by doing that.
And robbing yourself of a true connection with another person. Like when you said, when you said it's about manipulating, I always... This is going to sound bad. I get excited when I get to say that to clients, because I'm like, this is going to be a big breakthrough for them. But at the same time, I know it's going to be incredibly painful for them to hear.
Painful.
So I have this, it's like this harsh dichotomy of, oh, I'm so excited to like share this with them because I think it's going to be really important. But at the same time, like, oh shit, that's not going to feel good. But like, it's okay. We'll work through it.
And yes. Often, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and often like when I share it, they just kind of like sit there in awe for a minute of, oh, I am trying to control. I am actually manipulating. And you're so right when you say it goes against your values. And it's so important to follow this up, like, especially if you're a clinician listening, I always follow up with, I know that that's not what you really want to be doing. And it's of no malice intent. It's you trying to protect yourself.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I had the like core mindfulness practice in Radically Open is called self-inquiry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, it's a gnarly process because you are having to sum up your distress with a learning question. So it's like just all the discomfort. And that's, I find Tara to be really helpful in that. But I was helping a client go through a self-inquiry process with a particular thing. And he ended up going like, I think maybe that one of the conclusions from this line of questioning is going to be, I'm not as good of a person as I thought I was. Mm. And I was like, yeah, I think so. Martyrdom is a good hallmark of over-control. And while they're just two sides of a coin of being a martyr, right? There is the like bleeding heart wanting to give. And then there's also the willingness to like string yourself up on your cross for everyone to look at you.
Right.
And that part is not, it's not fun. That part is like pretty damning. It's actually not very Mother Teresa-y. Mm. It's pretty gross. And being able to take a hard look at that and go like, oh no. It's like, I'm thinking of the devil card of like, I allowed myself to get chained to this thing and I don't want to take the chain off.
Right. Because sometimes it feels good.
Because sometimes this is fun and also everything else around here is darkness. So I have absolutely no idea what would happen if I took this chain off.
Right. And that fear of ambiguity.
What's going to happen is kind of a thing.
Right. Exactly. And it's you bringing up your client coming to this conclusion of maybe I'm not like as good of a person. Ooh, like we didn't... I did an episode on that a long time ago titled, Am I a Good Person? So if you're listening, go check that one out. But it's such, that in and of itself is such a complicated question and experience, especially when you're a perfectionist or you're over-controlled, because there's so much fear and trepidation tied up in, well, what does it say or what would it mean if I am flawed?
And that's the self-inquiry piece, is the what would it say? What would it mean? How would I? Yeah. And I think for me, the like end of the day goal of Radically Open DBT is helping over-controlled people rejoin the human race.
Oof.
That we use perfectionism to try to be superhuman, thinking that being superhuman is going to be so much better. And it's not. It's like all saving Gotham City and then Gotham City like hating you for it. It's really crappy. Wow,
that's actually really good. Well, and it goes back to the whole premise of like what the main difference between DBT and RODBT is, where, you know, DBT focuses on this, you know, emotional dysregulation and getting to know, you know, coping skills and the different emotional experiences you're having, where RO is more about emotional loneliness. And you just described that perfectly, about kind of reintegrating into society or not even reintegrating, just integrating for the first time. Because if you're someone who is a perfectionist or you're over-controlled, you are very isolated, whether you realize it or not. Isolated in the sense that you are not allowing yourself to truly be seen as you are by another person. And I can't, like, I can even get emotional, like right now thinking about some of the times where I haven't allowed myself to do that versus the times that I have. And the times that I have allowed someone to truly see me, like, at my core. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I can just, like, feel it all. I can just feel it in my chest. Like, even though it's uncomfortable, it feels so good. And then I think about the times when I've been in that self-preservation mode. And it feels so cold and it might have felt safe in the moment. Oh, like this person can't hurt me. And, you know, if they don't know this about me, then like everything's fine. But to give yourself permission and have that experience of fully being vulnerable and not being a perfect person and someone still holding that space with you or loving you anyway or accepting you anyway is absolutely life-changing. And I think everybody should give themselves permission to do that.
Yes. Yeah. The RO term is tribe. It's like we humans evolved to live in the tribe and being exiled by the tribe was the kiss of death. Mm-hmm. And so that's why social signaling is the target, because the most protective factor for anyone's mental health is going to be having a person to call at the end of the day where you go, I totally screwed up at work today and my boss doesn't know yet and I'm terrified for when he finds out. Mm-hmm. Like you have to have a person to be able to like ugly cry in front of or to go like, I'm actually, or like to, like, I remember when I was newly pregnant, how vulnerable that piece of information was and like being so scared to like tell people and how they were going to react and what that would mean for the future and just all like even like joyous news can be really excruciating to tell. It can be really vulnerable.
Yep.
And you have to have tribe in order. Like you can have all the skills in the whole world. If you don't have tribe, then like it's going to feel real empty.
This was such an enlightening conversation, and I feel like I could probably spend hours just like nerding out with you about this.
Yes. Gosh, I love nerding out on therapy and tarot and perfectionism and religion and the whole, forever. I could just talk about it forever.
And I can't wait to have you on again for another conversation. So, but in the, like, before that happens, tell folks where they can find you. Well, what are you doing? What do you have going on? Give folks the rundown. Yeah.
So the easiest place to find me is at @sparrow_soulwork on Instagram. So you'll see a lot of my like over control and conservative evangelicalism stuff there. And right now I have an RO skills class, audio skills class in the works. So if someone is interested in Radically Open doing just the like learning piece, the skills piece, it's pretty conversational in that like I'm just kind of chatting to the mic just by myself. So if people are interested in acquiring those skills, because RO is kind of a newer therapy modality. Right. So not a lot of therapists have training or access to all of that yet. So I'm building that out. And then I'm hopefully going to be starting a couple of groups in the summer and in the fall. So
nice.
Stay tuned. Lots of fun things happening.
Yeah. Amazing stuff happening. Stuff that I feel like folks need more access to. So thank you for all the work that you're doing. And thank you for being here with me today.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. For more tarot and mental health content, follow The Tarot Diagnosis on Instagram. You can also subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode and sign up to receive The Tarot Diagnosis emails where you'll have access to exclusive spreads and exciting announcements. To join an incredible community of tarot and psychology enthusiasts, join the Tarot Diagnosis membership community, The Symposium, by visiting thetarotdiagnosis.com.